If you eat sick meat, you get sick. That's pretty common thinking these days, and explains why so many of us want to buy naturally and humanely processed meat. Now, if you don't do it yourself, you probably know someone who refuses to eat meat raised with antibiotics or hormones. But here's the thing. For as much attention as meat gets these days, the people who are actually processing the meat, the folks who are working in the slaughterhouses, they're being left in the shadows. Not enough of us are looking into their working conditions, conditions which some reports describe as inhumane. In a recent investigation for The Intercept, reporter Eyal Press reveals how the chemicals sprayed on poultry and slaughterhouses are making USDA inspectors sick. His article is called "Something in the Air." Jessica Robertson got sick working as an inspector at a poultry plant. Now she's speaking out to defend workers exposed to chemicals. Jessica's here too, along with Tina McClellan. They both used to be USDA inspectors and are featured in the article, which you can read on TheIntercept.com. Eyal, Jessica, Tina, welcome.
Thank you.
So Eyal, what led you to investigate this story?
Well, it was actually exactly what you emphasized in your introduction. I was interested in how much attention consumers now pay to what the how the animals they eat, if they eat meat, how they are treated, whether they're humanely raised. If you go to Whole Foods or a supermarket, you see all this labeling on packaging that pertains to that. What you see very little of is information about the working conditions in slaughterhouses and poultry and generally in meatpacking. And the more I read about it, the more alarmed I was, just in the sense that this is an industry that for decades now has been speeding up lines, and the reports of injury are very high. Now, my article goes in a somewhat different direction because we know a little bit about sort of how repetitive strain and the physical toll that working on the line in a poultry or meatpacking plant can have. My article is about the chemicals that are sprayed on poultry, both chicken and turkey. And the particular chemical I focus on is parasitic acid. Why is it sprayed? Well, it's sprayed actually to make consumers safe. Yes.
So we'll get to that in a second, this parasitic acid, because there's a lot of complexity in this piece.
Sure.
And people are wondering, obviously, about the food they eat. But if we could turn to Jessica and Tina for a second. Jessica, how are you feeling right now?
Good morning. Well, I feel much better than I did when I worked at the turkey plant. However, I have been left with asthma that leaves it difficult to breathe at times.
So you have asthma because you worked in this turkey plant. What about you, Tina?
Yes, I've also have asthma from the chemicals, and mine's actually progressed to I have to be on an inhaler every day, and I haven't been around the chemicals since November.
You haven't been around those chemicals in months, and yet you use an inhaler every day because you worked in a slaughterhouse?
Yes, yeah. They actually pulled me out of Moroni and put me on the road, and even the chemicals that I was exposed to during that time frame worsened my condition.
What's your regime like now? How do you operate day to day given your condition?
Well, the inhaler helps a lot. And, you know, we've had a lot of wildfires here in Utah, and so that kind of puts a strain on it a little bit. The air quality isn't as good, but it works. We get along.
Now, Eyal is going to talk to us about this chemical, but before he gives us some specifics, when did you realize something is wrong? When did you realize you couldn't work at this plant anymore?
When I never decided I couldn't work at the plant. The USDA decided for me. I was actually taken from the plant by ambulance, and I was told I can never return there, and had been put on the road for a year and a half after that.
For a year and a half?
I was displaced away from my home, away from my livestock.
So, Eyal, talk to us about this chemical. What is this chemical used for?
So as I was saying, and I'm so glad Jessica and Tina are here, by the way, on the show, because it's so important to hear directly from them what their stories are. And they're both people who, as I'll say and explain, were punished really for doing their jobs. So this chemical, parasitic acid, is used to control pathogens like Salmonella, which everybody pretty much agrees is a worthy thing, is an important thing. The problem is, if you spray chemicals in poorly ventilated plants, you're exposing PAA, this chemical, is a highly corrosive, toxic chemical. And it can cause burns and eye irritations and breathing problems and lung irritations. This has been showing up in complaints from workers and federal inspectors for years. In fact, I discuss in my piece the case of a federal inspector in a plant in New York who died of a lung hemorrhage who was exposed to PAA and also chlorine and other chemicals that are sprayed.
But is there a link between that inspector's death and these chemicals? Is there a concrete link?
So it's a very important question. The problem is that no thorough review of these chemicals has actually been done. OSHA does not regulate or set a standard for permissible spraying. You have these complaints coming up from within the plants, but neither the FDA nor the USDA regulate in terms of worker safety. You know, they look for things like consumer safety, and the USDA actually is mandated with a kind of dual mission. On the one hand, to concern for consumer safety and what consumers eat. On the other hand, the promotion of agribusiness. And these two things, when they come in conflict, I think most observers of the industry will say, the USDA, the government, tends to side with agribusiness. That's what happened in the Moroni turkey slaughterhouse where Jessica and Tina worked. Both Jessica and Tina started filing complaints about PAA, and they can say more about sort of why they did so. As I report, they did this for years. I mean, this didn't just happen. They started getting sick. They started feeling this irritation, and they started seeing it in coworkers as well. And they did their jobs, which was to file complaints or forms. They were called 4791 forms that they sort of passed up the chain of command. Those complaints seemed to disappear into thin air.
Jessica, yeah. How many complaints did you file?
I'd have to say probably well over 100 or very close to it. I've been filing 4791 since 2014. I have some that go back further than that, but in 2014 I was probably filing one every other day. There were some weeks where there were 4791s filed every day. We went through a really bad time frame where the chemicals were really bad. The company was tinkering with their levels. And at that time, that's when a lot of us started really coming up sick. Our team, our inspection team at Moroni, which consisted of four of us, all four of us had gotten sick. All four of us were complaining. Not a whole lot done. They seemed, just like Ale said, they seemed to kind of work more with the companies than they do for their own people.
Was anybody aware that you were complaining? Or
by far. We had the union involved. It was talked about in the union meetings with the people that are supposed to be doing something. Our district manager at the time, Anna Gallegos. The district office was very well aware of it. They started coming down in I think around 2016 and started to investigate a little bit. They came up with a parasitic acid monitor, or what they called the sniffer, which...
A sniffer? What's really, a sniffer? Is it a device? Is it a dog? What are we talking about?
It's a handheld device that they would walk around that would basically take readings of chemical levels. However, there's no true test to read for parasitic acid. And the machine, the sniffer that was sent down to Moroni, the Norvest turkey plant, was only a prototype, as you will. So I'm not sure what they thought that was supposed to do, and that is their defense. Well, we sent down a monitor. We were monitoring it, and we never got any high levels. Well, A, how can you test for anything if there's no set level? You have no idea what level even becomes toxic or volatile. They came up with an arbitrary number out of a study that was done. Tina could probably help me on the name of that report. But it's an arbitrary number, and if you look into the estimated time, the exposure for 15 minutes could be deadly and leave you with long life effects.
So the exposure for 15 minutes could be deadly. Can you describe to us, Tina or Jessica, your specific activities? What literally would you do from the moment you walked into work to the moment you left that you believe exposed you to this chemical?
Tina, you want to go first? Or
go ahead, Jess.
You would say it's a Monday morning. You come in on a Monday morning, you feel okay because you've been away for a couple days. By Monday, you start to feel like it's hard to breathe. You get congested. Your eyes might start to water a little bit. It progressed through the week. By Tuesday, Wednesday, it got worse. By Friday, it was so hard to breathe. And this is before all of us were diagnosed or were on all these inhalers. To a point where we were having to take days off of work. We were rotating with each other, taking days off of work and kind of covering each other so that we could get an extra day away from there. Myself, I probably had a bloody nose almost every day for 2 years. I've not had any since I've been out of the plant or away from those chemicals. I still need my inhalers, my rescue inhalers, but I don't have to use it daily like I was.
What was your job? What were you literally doing every day? What were you tasked with doing? Were you picking up this meat? Were you walking around? What were you doing?
My position was called a consumer safety inspector. I not only worked the slaughter line, but I did a lot of testing in different areas of the turkey plant. A lot of the areas where I tested would be where the chemicals would be at the highest, or we'd have more instances in because of lack of ventilation in that area, an extreme lack of ventilation in that area. One of those areas is called pre-chill, where the birds would be tested. I would do random tests there before they would get into the chillers. One of the worst spots would be at the post-chill after the birds came out of the chillers. And then they just went through a 3-hour chemical bath, and now they're getting sprayed with even more chemicals. And if I had a failing test, I would have to stay in that area. And there were times that I would have to basically abandon my post because I couldn't be there anymore, because I would start choking so bad to a point you cough so hard to where you can't catch your breath.
So you were in the room while they were being sprayed. The chickens were being sprayed, and you were being hit with that mist.
Oh, by far. In this particular establishment, 95% of the plant where you will walk around in, you will be in a mist. The only place you can really avoid the chemicals is out in the shipping and in the warehouse, so to speak. Anywhere that there is production, you are walking in constant mist of chemicals, and you're walking through puddles of chemicals on the floor. They say it has a 40-second dissipation time. However, if it's a constant spray and a constant mist, does it ever dissipate?
Does it ever dissipate? I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I'm speaking with journalist Ael Press about his recent piece for The Intercept titled Something in the Air, Whistleblowers. Jessica Robertson and Tina McLennan are also with us. They used to be former USDA inspectors and were featured in the story. Later on in the show, directors Kevin Rafferty and Jane Loder talk about the re-release of their restored 1982 documentary, The Atomic Cafe. Then, Harper's Magazine contributors Richard Manning and Scott Sayer discuss the cost and causes of recent wildfires at home and abroad. But when we come back, more on this case about the USDA inspectors who are getting sick, making sure your meat is safe. You're listening to WNYC. This is the Midday Show. So much more coming up. The This is the Midday Show, and I'm Duarte Geraldino. We're speaking with IL Press about his investigation, about how the people who are supposed to make sure the meat you eat is safe, well, they're getting sick. Now, Eyal, I understand that chemical manufacturers normally give poultry plants material safety data sheets. Aren't poultry plants required to post those data sheets to warn workers about the potential health risks associated with these chemicals?
They are supposed to post those, but the regulation in this industry is very lax. That's one of the things I discovered in doing this story. It should also be noted that I had said that, you know, these chemicals are used to control pathogens like salmonella. Everyone pretty much agrees that's a worthy public health goal. We don't want consumers worried about that, although you still have to wash your chicken before you eat it and so forth. But it's really worth noting that other countries don't actually use toxic chemicals to control those pathogens.
It's just the USA that are using these toxic chemicals?
The USA uses these toxic chemicals. The European Union does not use these toxic chemicals, and in fact has gone into, has resisted efforts in trade negotiations to have poultry treated with these chemicals sold in the European market. Now, well, what are they doing so differently? What they do is called the farm-to-fork approach to food safety. So basically that means there has to be hygienic standards at every step of the processing stage. So clean water, sheds that are clean, animals that are not exposed unnecessarily to disease. Here in America, we have factory farms, which are notorious for the amount of bacteria that's going around. We have line speeds that are incredibly fast. We have a USDA that has slashed the number of inspectors, and we have a poultry industry that relies heavily on high turnover, very low wage worker model, so that workers are cycled through these plants very quickly. And all of that leads to less regulation, and then you have a problem when you have these factory farms. The chicken and the turkey that gets to the farm, to the slaughterhouse, is often contaminated. So what do? We do a kind of last resort approach, which is to spray it. The problem with that, as I point out in the piece, is people like Jessica and Tina, and also many, many workers, who are then left to inhale these chemicals and to deal with the health repercussions.
So what are the long-term repercussions of exposure to this chemical?
You know, as I said, I tell a story in my piece about a USDA inspector named Jose Navarro, who died of a lung hemorrhage. In Jessica and Tina's case, both of them were rushed to the ER while they were working, and then both of them were relocated to other plants outside of where they live, which they didn't want to do. Why did that happen? They both believe it happened because they were raising too much of a fuss. I recently learned that 20 poultry workers were brought to Washington by watchdogs from the industry to meet with USDA to tell them that they were getting sick from these chemicals, including a woman who had the chemical enter her eye and it was sprayed. The USDA basically told them, there's nothing we can do for you. And that's not good enough from the perspective of these workers, and I'm sure from the perspective of Jessica and Tina.
So Jessica, Tina, you both in Utah, you took these jobs. Did you have alternatives? How difficult was it to find another job?
Well, in our community that we live in, it's extremely rural, and so this was the best job in that county. And there's no other work out there. I actually have to travel to Salt Lake to try to find employment. And I still actually am a USDA inspector. They opted to release me from going to slaughter facilities. So I've been not working since November, but I'm also not getting paid, but I'm still an employee. They refused to work me.
They refused to work you. And how are you making ends meet?
I lived off my savings, and my husband has helped, you know, but when you have two homes and you're bouncing back and forth, and my livestock's down in the area, so I have to worry about my livestock because Salt Lake's not really a livestock-friendly area.
I guess what maybe to clarify, we have to drive
about an hour, myself an hour, Tina an hour, hour and a half for work now, versus the 20-minute drive that we once had for right. half the wages, for less, way more, way less than half the wage that we used to work. We have no, myself, I have no retirement at this time. I have no insurance. Yeah.
How much did the jobs used to, how much did they used to pay?
Last year I grossed over $80,000.
But there's so much risk involved.
Yes. I'd been with the agency for almost 16 years. And I am now starting over at a $13 an hour job. $13 an hour. No benefits. I have no benefits. I have no retirement. Nothing. That's all been ripped and shred from both of us.
And now you have the health consequences, your asthma that you're dealing
with. You asked the question, what are the long-term effects?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. And that's what one of our points is trying to get out there, is there hasn't been proper testing done on this. The testing that was done in a perfect scenario, perfect ventilation, perfect healthy poultry, versus where we worked, where Ale described it quite accurately. The reason industry has to use so much chemical is because we are allowing them to run in insanitary conditions, and as a last-minute resort, we soak them in chemicals so that the testing that, say, I or the USDA inspectors do, they can pass them because they've been soaked in chemicals, because we have to allow them to run at these ungodly line speeds, or you know, they can do whatever they want, and our own people are telling us to basically sit down, don't worry about it, relax. Mm-hmm. You know, in the end, the accumulative overall, the average, they'll be okay. But what about the day to day? I would do testings and fail. I went a month, 30 days, and in 30 days, I had 17 fecal failures, which means that bird was about to go into a bag onto somebody's table, and it was full of fecal.
The bird was full of fecal excrement, just to make sure everyone understands what we're talking about. And
yeah.
It was about to go on someone's table. Had you not sort of intervened?
Correct. And when I did my job, that was another reason. You know, the company kept trying to play with the antimicrobial levels, turning them up. But every time they turned them up, people would start getting sick. And then, you know, they would turn them back down. But it's pretty sad when our own people, Mr. Bill Smith, who is one of the head guys in the USDA, is telling a company, just turn your chemicals up. Your testing is failing, so you need to turn your chemicals up. And the company says, but we've done that, and it hasn't worked. Oh, well, maybe you should try a new method of chemical instead of, how about let's run your company in a sanitary manner.
And Norbest even commented to our boss that it's cheaper, more of a business decision to complain and get rid of these inspectors that are complaining than it is to install a proper ventilation system.
Correct.
There's so many complicated elements to this. I want to make sure that you can clarify some points to us. One,
sure.
On social media, and we're getting a lot of calls right now who want to know very, very clearly, is the chicken or the turkey that they're eating dangerous because of this chemical?
Well, that's another question. So what I say in the article is that the FDA relies on industry data to determine that it is safe to use this chemical. We do believe it's safe. In other words, the harm and the danger of PAA and these chemicals that are sprayed is to the people who are in the plants rather than to consumers who then eat poultry. But I should say, one of the reasons Europe doesn't want poultry sprayed with chemicals is because surveys of consumers there show that 95-98% of consumers don't feel assured by that. So I can understand the callers in the social media who are asking about that. The other thing I would point out is, let's just imagine that these kinds of health problems arose in a white-collar profession. Let's imagine, say, a branch of the law or congressional aides who were going to work every day, coughing, red-eyed, rushed to the emergency room, asthma. We would have a federal agency, especially if they were federal employees, as Tina and Jessica are, we would expect an investigation to be done to make sure in advance that there are no long-term problems with this. In this case, we've just kind of let it go.
You're touching on a really important topic because socioeconomics play a critical role. In fact, you wrote in the report that the plant's workforce includes a large contingent of undocumented immigrants whose status makes them incredibly vulnerable, and it makes it difficult for them to advocate for themselves. How much, if they were citizens, if they were white-collar workers, do you think this would happen at all?
Well, I think it's not an accident that Jessica and Tina have been incredibly courageous in bringing this forward and speaking and risking their jobs, which they both got punished for doing. But let's note that there isn't a worker from the plant who's come forward on this show. I do interview a few workers in my article, but they go unnamed or they only give their first name.
And did they ask you for that? Did they say?
Absolutely. And in fact, the immigrant workforce wouldn't talk on the record at all. And they affirmed and confirmed that they had suffered these health problems, but they didn't want even the slightest possibility that they would be exposed. And that's an industry-wide thing, and it's not an accident. So, 30, 40 years ago, slaughterhouses, it was a unionized job. It paid pretty well. In fact, it paid better than a lot of other union factory jobs. Then there was a new model that was adopted. It was high turnover, high speed, and plants like Norbest started importing immigrant labor to do a job that the local population didn't want to do because it was unsafe and it paid poorly and it was dangerous.
It's so troubling. So what about this particular plant? Don't they say that they take extra steps to make sure that their turkey is ranch-raised and has no added hormones or steroids? We're talking about the one in Norbest, Utah. What's happening? Given that claim, it's easy to think that it's completely safe in there, but what you are telling me is that that is not true.
It's certainly not true, and Jess and Tina should chime in, but I should say I tried repeatedly to have Norbest, in a sense, tell its story, tell me why these complaints arose and why they use these chemicals and what the conditions for workers in the plant are. They did not answer. They didn't even answer written questions that I sent. So I'm a little hamstrung in representing their side of this. I will say that based on what I learned, they do a very good job of advertising to consumers who, as you say, want to eat ranch-raised, hormone-free. By the way, hormone-free means nothing for poultry. Consumers should know that. It's a bit of a misnomer because hormones are not used.
But it means nothing. So why do they even put it there?
Because they think that the consumer who wants to eat something healthy will be appeased by that, and many are. It's important for cattle, for beef, as I understand it. It has no meaning in poultry.
Jessica, were you saying something, Tina?
Well, just that, the hormone and the steroid, it is federal regulation that you cannot feed your poultry steroids or hormones. We do test for that, but that is a standard regulation. But like Ale said, it's just kind of a selling stint. It's, a promotional thing. It makes it sound like the birds are so much healthier and whatnot. If you saw the condition of some of the birds that come into the poultry plant there at Norbest, poor condition. The birds, very poor condition.
They're not raised on a ranch.
The ranch raised, the farm raised, all of that, they're in coops. And when you hear free range, that means that they get to poke their head out of a window. They might have a 20-foot area of where they can walk outside of the chicken or out of the turkey coop. It doesn't mean they get to walk around and do all these fun-loving things that wild turkeys would do.
Last fall, an animal rights group snuck into the Norbest plant and took videos and photographs showing injured, sickly birds wallowing in filthy conditions. Now, those stories made headlines. Tina, Jessica, how did you react when you saw that?
Well, Matt Cook was pro that they don't treat their livestock like that. The turkeys aren't, that was just a fluke that happened with one rancher. And that's not the truth at all. Every coop is like that.
By far. And in fact, his story was is that grower that that story emphasized on was fined, and there were certain protocol that they held against him from the National Turkey Federation. Basically, he was fined and he was put on warning and this and that those birds were actually taken care of. Those birds ended up in the slaughter plant a week and a half later after that article came out.
And they were doused with this chemical, this PAA chemical?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they made it onto the plates of consumers?
Of course.
You bet. Probably about 20,000 of them.
So, Ayel,
and this is,
yes?
And this goes on a lot where they have a sick flock of birds, and they got to hurry and get them squeezed in for the day's slaughter.
Slaughter.
Because they're so sick. The grower will lose money if the birds keep dying.
I just want to add, I think both Jess and Tina were not surprised by those stories, but I remember when I went out to the area and spoke to you guys about that, one of the reactions you had was also, well, this is important, but there should also be concern in the public about the workforce. And I think that's a general thing that I heard over and over again. I heard it from union representative. I heard it from workers. I heard it from USDA inspectors, that consumers out there are so vigilant, again, about sort of what do I eat and is it healthy? And is it properly vetted for me so that I don't have to feel bad and so that I won't get sick? But very little about the human factor. And this is a big industry. It's a very profitable industry. It's all over the country. It is employing people and exposing them to hazardous conditions. And again, in Jessica and Tina's case, what they did wrong was doing their job.
What they did wrong was doing their job. Just to be clear, is it your belief that this is a much bigger issue, that there are other people in other plants around the country who are also getting sick because of this chemical, this PAA?
Well, as I said, since the article came out, I received a letter from a number of consumer and labor groups that brought 20 workers, poultry workers, to Washington, to the USDA. Some of them were from North Carolina. Some of them were from Texas. All of them were suffering from these chemicals. They came to the USDA. They said, we need to, you know, have this addressed. And from what I heard, the USDA spokesperson, the acting deputy undersecretary, Carmen Rottenberg, said, morally and philosophically, I agree with what you're saying. I'm with you, but there's nothing we can do here. Which kind of left the folks who had brought them there stunned. You know, you're the USDA. You're the agency that ought to be, you know, advocating not just for agribusiness, but for the workforce that helps put the food on the table for people.
Thank you so much. Excellent reporting. I'm thankful that you are highlighting this issue. Jessica, Tina, we're rooting for you, hoping that you feel better.
Thank you.
And I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I've been speaking with journalist Ayel Press about his recent piece for The Intercept titled Something in the Air, along with whistleblowers Jessica Robertson and Tina McLennan, former USDA inspectors. They were featured in the story.